This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. George Wallace is here. He is a poet from Long Island, New York, and he's been spending the week in Washington at the Hellenic Institute, where he's been studying, researching for his new poetry, and participating in some panels and discussions. But George is primarily a poet, and he's going to show you right now with an opening poem. Here's George Wallace.
Thank you, Grace. Simple blues with a few intangibles. A simple blues with a few intangibles. What Johnny Jackson had been playing all night long and all his life in a one-room walk-up, beating on a steam pipe with the heel of his shoe. Nothing much on his mind except work in the back room. A beat sort of gentleman with a chill in the bebop. A blues sort of gentleman, positively anarchistic and wise. Oh man, what a cool bohemian and beat to the bone. Beat to the bone, how he worked that tune. No more, no less than the music of the universe passed through the man. From the gods and for them and for the people too. It was always about the people. Johnny crooned, always about the people, running new chords and old chords and no chords over his tongue like the Midas of midnight. A simple blues with a few intangibles, in the solitude of his own sweet madness, at home with the moon.
That is the voice of George Wallace, and now we know why you are considered a jazz poet, and that you accompany musicians a lot. What is there about your poetry that is suitable for jazz and for music?
Well, thank you for asking that question. It was not always that way, but my poetry is exploratory and it's music-based. So when I do my writing, my creative writing, I let the music of what I'm writing and the initial impetus for the writing push me in a direction. I don't even know what I'm going to be writing about until I'm done. So the originating impulse is a musical impulse.
Like the jazz musicians.
That's right, yeah.
You're improvising.
I'm teasing a core, just like a person doing improvisation. They'll start with some particular bit of musical information or annotation and then go off in a direction. Tease it, find out what it is they want to say in a new original way through improvisation.
Well,
coming back to the core.
Since you are not using musical instruments, I had to listen and hear how you use syllables as music and how you ride those vowels and how you repeat words to get some resonance. So you're really using the same concept of music. When did you perform last? It was in D.C., wasn't it? Last year?
Oh, well, last year I performed with Donovan, the popular folk musician.
I remember Donovan.
At the Center for Hellenic Studies, where I'm staying just now. So that's my last time here in Washington.
Donovan is more of a folk musician.
He's a folk musician.
So how did you integrate with that?
Well, we didn't collaborate. You know, there was not a collaboration. But it happens in various ways. Soon after that, back in New York, where I'm from, I performed with Thurston Moore, who's a from Sonic Youth, is a punk rocker. And so he has his own particular music, and it's worked in various ways. I've collaborated with many different musicians, different genre.
Let us hear more of George Wallace.
Good. Well, this is more of a bluesy thing, and it's from my upcoming book, should be released from Blue Light Press in the next few months. It's called Poems in a Coffee Pot. It's about immigrants. Life was good. It was finally good. There was God in the popcorn. There was poems in the coffee pot. There was sandlots and cracker jacks and pickled jars and pitchers of beer. There was tenements and bosses and Coney Island holidays. And the immigrants came, and the immigrants came in their immigrant pants and their immigrant dresses. And they built New York out of glass and steel in their own immigrant image. Olive oil, eggplant, prayer shawl, candelabra, chicken fat, wine, and they kept on coming, and they kept on coming with their accents and their operatics and their strange music halls and their strange melodramas and stubborn political sciences. Eastern Europeans, Southern Europeans, Polish, Russian, Italians, Jews, Greeks, and they kept their big traps shut when they were forced to, but they stuck to their guns, and they took the dirty jobs in the dirty factories. And the lights went out on Saturday night at 10:15, and the bedposts shook, and the radiators rattled like an elevated railway, and late-night jazz, and the stubborn lights of New York City glittered like a knife thrust deep into the heart of heaven. And the immigrants of New York City wrestled with each other in the dead of night for love, for loss, for consolation, for unreasonable, unstoppable, unnatural hope.
So your new book is going to have that theme, or is that just
that's
one
a major
of the
theme in the book? Is the immigrant experience, collision of cultures, and especially through immigration, and the adding on of cultures into the American experience, going all the way back to the Native Americans.
That's going to be terribly important. And you were part of a discussion just recently about immigration, disenfranchisement, the nomad spirit. Can you just sum up in a couple of sentences what was learned by that?
Well, with a particular political climate in America, the questions about xenophobia and how we treat the other, how we treat strangers, and whether we should fear new ideas and new peoples into our culture—a recurring problem, a recurring question in America, but really pronounced right now.
But
is something that we had a discussion about last night at the Center for Hellenic Studies, the idea of leadership and what our role is as leaders in America in helping people to reconnect to our acceptance and interest in the immigrant experience. And that comes from the ancient Greek.
You scholars sit and discuss this with great illumination. But what worries me is it is not getting out to Middle America. And I feel that is such a very important topic that somehow we have to manage to convey this to places outside of the Hellenic Institute. And I'm sure that you're going to be a part of that.
Well, the Center for Hellenic Studies, which is a Harvard institution, held this event, but the people in the panel were administrators and bureaucrats and people from the media. So there was a variety of people involved in it. And rather than say there were scholars, because I mean there are scholars, and scholarship is what the center's about. But a person like me I'm a poet from New York
City. I would say so. And let's hear some poetry.
So this is the spreading out what occurred last night.
George Wallace at the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and we're going to hear him again.
Well, this is a poem which was from one of five books that were put out for me by Night Ballet Press in Cleveland. And it's called Riding with Boom Boom. So it's topical because it has to do with police brutality. Riding with Boom Boom. The facts are simple. They speak for themselves. But facts don't always tell the whole story. He was a bluesman. He played the blues. He was 60 years old. He lived alone in a split-level shack in Kings Park, Long Island, New York, with a ramp in front of account of his back and a maple tree in the yard, which his kids used to swing on when they were little. He liked choppers. He liked Jack Daniels. He liked his bass guitar. And he liked his kids and his friends and a woman or two. And he liked putting on his riding gear and going out into the Long Island Expressway at night to ride, baby, ride. The cops say they didn't target Boom Boom. The cops say they didn't track Boom Boom down. Cops said they were just protecting the public when they came to his house to haul him in. Somebody phoned and said he was behaving irrational. Irrational. Irrational to be the person they don't want you to be. Irrational to refuse to swallow the 9-to-5. Irrational to fight the leather belt they strap you down with when the psych doctors come around to pick you apart. Irrational to cut loose, to escape, to be passionate, to ride out free when the blues and the booze and the passing lane just aren't enough. And you've got to get away from the pain of living in this messed up, rational world. Facts are simple. They speak for themselves. But facts are never enough. They just do their job, like cops do their job, like doctors do their job. And liquor and motorcycles and the blues do their job. He was 60 years old. He played the bass guitar. Everybody says he was tons of fun on stage. Sometimes the bass guitar isn't enough to make the blues go away. Mm. They took him in and there was a struggle, so they say. He hit his head on something, so they say. What he hit his head on, the cops aren't saying, or how a 60-year-old with a bad back can even put up that kind of a fight against a group of cops or even try to run away. His name was Larry Ports. Good name, simple name, speaks for itself. But names are just facts. All they do is their job. Names aren't enough to cure what ails you in a messed up, rational world. That's why his friends called him Boom Boom. That's how he rode. That's who he really was. They say, the cops say, that somebody named Lawrence Ports died. Well, that ain't Boom Boom. Boom Boom ain't dead. The cops cannot kill Boom Boom. All over America tonight, all over the world, men will be riding motorcycles, women will be getting tattoos, kids will be drinking Jack Daniels, and blues men will be playing the blues. I don't know where you'll be or what you'll be doing tonight, but as for me, I'll be riding with Boom Boom, getting irrational.
Facts are the enemy of the truth, right?
That's right.
George Wallace at the Library of Congress. He is a professor at Pace University in Westchester. Is it Long Island?
Pace is downtown Manhattan by the Brooklyn Bridge.
Oh. And you're also the writer in residence at the Walt Whitman Birthplace.
Right, since 2011. That's a great gig.
And are you going to stay on?
Well, it was supposed to be for 1 year, but this is now 2017, so it seems like
they like you.
They keep renewing me.
And you keep inviting poets, and you are the persona there representing the theme of Walt Whitman. What else do you do there?
Well, it's two things. I organize in-house events, prominent poets from around the country, internationally, actually. And the second thing I do is I represent the birthplace. So I've over the years, I've been to the John Steinbeck Center in Salinas and to the Robbie Burns Center in southern Scotland and the Dylan Thomas Center in Swansea.
Not
I've
a bad
been to
gig.
The Gordon Parks Museum in Kansas, and really all over the country, representing the ideas of Whitman and how they relate to other people.
Also, I know. Actually, I first met you through the internet, and you were running and still host PoetryBay.com.
Right.
What is that?
Poetry Bay. I was interested in creating a magazine that had a national profile. And with the increasing interest in the internet and use of the internet, I saw an opportunity that the internet publishing was not all sewed up. So I was able to reach out to people and have them give me material from very good, high-quality people and enter Poetry Bay online as a top-notch publication. Still, you know, bringing in new voices, people that hadn't been heard much. But because the internet was a wild west, I mean, I could really come in at this high level.
Let's hear another poem from George Wallace. This is from what book?
This book is called Poppin' Johnny, which I'm very proud of. This came out of my experience working with some very good writers at Pacific University for my MFA program. So among them are people who I think you've had here. This called This Redhead of My Sudden Acquaintance. And it's fast-paced. Well, what I mean to say, the road was straighter than this, and I was driving unreasonably fast, a 57 Chrysler Imperial boy. You remember those? Of course you do. Well, maybe you don't. Oh, well, man, you know the kind, or maybe you don't. Cherry red, souped-up Electric windows, electric top, chrome grill, big damn fins, but no brakes. No brakes in that thing. You had to scuffle along with your feet. It would take you 3 miles to slow down if you really wanted to. There'd be rocks flying everywhere. You might need a new pair of shoes. Anyhow, I couldn't afford tires at that station because my situation being, concisely speaking, dire, if not to say extreme. But being that it was, I could, of course, have gone around the corner, that is to say, steal something secondhand. But at the time, I was with this redhead of my sudden acquaintance, well-positioned in town, she with a well-oiled boyfriend, me with plenty of time on my hands. But no, he was not in a tow on that particular morning. In fact, she had been sitting in a booth at the diner a very long time by the appearance of things. A long time. There's coffee cups and ashtrays full of nervous cigarettes. She was putting hairpins into and out of her hair. Well, I struck up a conversation. It got to be this, got to be that. Everything was going along pretty fine. When I looked at it outside, as sure as we're sitting here today, it had stopped raining. Morning was nearly over. The cat was out of the bag. So zippity-doo, we was off. Both of us shot out of the barrel. That was that. No doubt we was traveling 10 times faster than what's legal. I'm talking 35 plus 35 plus 35 and then some, and it was, yes, man. I mean, no, not on that road outside Fort Collins. I prefer it this late stage to say it was one of them back east, headed for her hometown in Kansas. She was a school teacher of good repute, you might say. Not a cop car to be seen. The breeze was everything. Eastern Colorado was a sight to see. She was smart. With that orange sky, no, not like the red in her hair. It was a coppery sort of red, like Lincoln's pipe on a new shiny penny. And she gave me the prettiest smile just then, the prettiest smile. Boy, you could just feel it. That car wanted to fly. We rolled down the window. We beat to the beat on the dash. Oh, my, she said. Oh, my, she said. My right toenail. Oh, my, I do believe it has just had an emotion.
I hope that someday they look into your brain and see exactly what neurons are acting up there, how they could ever perform like that. I was looking at your resume and I saw that you had, at one time in your life, among many other things, were in a medical profession.
And that's true, yeah.
in the service. So what was that about? I mean, how did that happen and what did you learn from it?
That was earlier.
20 years ago, right?
Yeah, I was, when I got out of college, and it was a long time ago, I had an English degree, you know? And so, I mean, people with PhDs were driving taxis in Boston at that point in time. So, you know, I pursued a variety of things and eventually got the idea that to do something of service, you know, try to do something of service to other human beings, and to do something that would enable me to experience internationally, you know, cross-culturally, something so I could have that adventure, was what I was looking for. And that was public health. So, you know, I joined the Peace Corps, and I was a tuberculosis volunteer in the Peace Corps in Korea. I went to graduate school, got a graduate degree, an MPH from Chapel Hill, and parlayed that into some rural healthcare organizing that I did. And Reagan got elected, and I lost the public money. So I joined the Air Force, and I was a hospital administrator in the Air Force. So eventually I got out of the field altogether.
How do you feel that is somehow in the DNA of your poetry? Is there anything from that experience that you feel made you what you are as a poet?
You know, as a person who has curiosity about the world, you know, I felt like it wasn't an intentional thing, but I felt that I needed to gather material for my palette, so that I had material to work with.
What did you learn about yourself? What did you learn about yourself?
Yeah, rather than sort of identity poetry, I was looking to explore, you know, what my real situation is and to enunciate that, or as a confessionalist poet or something like that. I was more interested in gathering together a full palette, a fully dimensional 360-degree palette of experience, real, you know, that fed into my imagination, so my imagination was enriched until eventually I had sufficient material that I could really dig down deep, or, you know, plumb those depths, and always come up with something wriggling in the bucket.
So being in the real world doesn't hurt. Let's have another poem.
Okay. Well, you wanted fast stuff, so I've got a couple of fast ones here. There are 1,000 ways to kiss a man. You kiss like a rescue dog. Your eyes look past me into the animal void. Your lips are resentful. Your teeth will not let go. Hey, why did you bite me like that? Your swollen tongue, your mouth too wide. You got a snarling set of tonsils, baby, hard as a park bench. Oh, yeah, you could start a fire with that mouth of yours. In a thrift shop, in a dump truck, in an ash can. You're a string of firecrackers, you are. You're a pretty kissing suborbital vixen. There are 1,000 ways to kiss a man, and that is not one of them. When you kiss, it feels like a cruel prison at the gates of paradise.
We won't explore that situation. Let's have another poem. George Wallace, I'm Grace Cavalieri at the Library of Congress. I was trying to find a theme in your poems. Now, if I read a poem of yours, I would know who wrote it, because you definitely have a voice. My theme is relationships. But I wonder if you could describe, looking at your canon of work, what thing you're saying again and again. What do you think it could be? You are certainly an observer of humankind, and you certainly are a social critic. But what do you see as a silver thread that connects everything you do?
Well, I think I've lived too long for there to be one. You know, at a certain point in time, you know, I pursued something. And earlier, at the beginning of the show, you called me a jazz poet, and I am a jazz poet at the moment. But I think the unifying theme is turn the corner, find out what's next. You know, be curious thematically as well as topically. You know, so, I mean, I've written poetry that's poems of conscience, a poetry of witness, and lyrical poetry. Elegiac poetry, really. I'm interested in finding out what I want to say next.
Ah, and you are working on something that you're going to say next, right? You have a new manuscript.
Yeah, that's right, and that's part of what's emerging from my experience here in Washington this week. You know, I think right now we need to look at who we are as Americans and what it is we have to confront, not in political terms, but in cultural terms, and as in our rituals and our customs as human beings, about the idea of brotherhood and who we are as brothers to each other, especially strangers. This is something we learn from ancient Greek writing. And anybody who knows, you know, knows the Odyssey, knows what Odysseus went through going from island to island, being treated wonderfully or terribly or seductively from island to island, and having to go through that process in order to get home and learn what it meant to be a visitor and a stranger in a strange land. You know, all of us have that immigrant experience in one way or another, either willingly from our ancestors or because we were brought here unwillingly, you know, as slaves to America. But one way or another, we've had to make that transition, and and the people that are here have had to find out how to accommodate, you know, different cultures into it.
We would love a final poem.
Okay. So off-road, four-wheel, busted-up collarbone, roll-bar, Miss America. She loved the dune buggy. She loved to ride. She loved to be outside herself, to spit and to cry and to hop like a toad. She loved to burn like a barn. Oh, shoot, look, Nova Can. She spit in the bushes, spit in the mountaintop. She spit in the prairie, on the bayou, into the mouth hole of the universal universe. She loved to sweather all weather, suit terrain, space jam, rain, 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 top down, hood up, piston busting, woman of the blue sky, her tie-tack shoe shine, her shotgun shack, her home on the rains, and she loved her own thick hair like nobody's business. She combed it back. She let it go wild. She tossed it back like a steel drum band, like a backdoor Catholic prophylactic Mormon figure eight little Miss Pagan America, drunk, crazy, entitled Mademoiselle. Oh, no, 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 the lights do not go out on you. Not the lights on Broadway, or the pool hall lights, or the jailhouse lights, not the junkyard lights, or the headlights, or the supermarket lights all night long in the supermarket night parking lot. and o'er mulish temper, and o'er talking back, and o'er racked up men with metallic skin, skinny men, fat men, muscle-headed men, sheets of gold, nobody could stop her. No titanium grease gun, Jake, no feed bag, Joe, no coke dust, dipstick, tin shield, sawdust sheriff, and here's what's important. She loved herself. She loved her body, her muscle, her calves, her skin, her ankle, thigh, hip, high heel boots. She shuddered. She waved like the prairie grass she secretly wanted to be. She shoved it around. She shook it out. She got took, got lost, got rediscovered, wasted and found, and ripped open, given away, put up on a pedestal, took for a ride and stolen in the night. And she yanked it all back out, every ounce of it, the flesh, the earth, the river, the rain, the red rock forest of oak. And she plummeted like eagles and grew like silver corn, acted foolish when she wanted to, wise when you didn't expect it. Off-road, four-wheel, busted up, collarbone, roll bar, Miss America, tossed her helmet 50 feet in the air, caught it in her right hand, just like that. A big Yahoo, pop fly, six-pack, beanbag woman, headphones blaring, dung busting, head crazy, over to anywhere, doomed as a devil dog, Little Miss American Paradise leaped out of the dark and into the sun.
The voice of George Wallace. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media. Post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. Funding for our program is provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation and the Witter Binner Foundation. Also by friends of poetry, Candace Katz and Hiram LaRue. Our engineer is Mike Turpin. I'm Grace Cavalieri.